Attention all units. We've got our sights on a new episode of Andor. We're gonna need some recon on this. Django Squadron, on your six. Mission's all yours, Squadron Leader. To anyone else on this comm link, send all transmissions to andor@thelorehounds.com and get holocron bonus episodes for 10 credits with our season pass in the show notes. Rebels, may the Force be with you.
Welcome to the Lorehounds Andor podcast. I'm John from the Lorehounds, and we're your guides to a galaxy far, far away. This is our coverage of Andor Season 2, Episode 7, titled Messenger. Now, with this weekly triple drop, you probably know this by now if you've been with us, but we're doing episode coverage squadron style. So I do the first episode every week, Alicia does the second, and David does the third. And each week we have another co-pilot. This week, you know, I was trying not to repeat people's pairings because, you know, I thought it'd be more exciting just to like throw everybody in a mixed bag. But today, it's my pleasure to welcome back Jean. I mean, I as much as I was trying to avoid repeating, I'm happy that I had to repeat with you, Jean.
Awesome, man. Thank you for having me back. I appreciate it.
I always love talking about Star Wars and everything with you. So I wouldn't have it any other way.
Awesome. Let's get into it.
All right. So we've got a brand new arc here. You know, it seems to be very Gorman focused. Do you want to give your hot takes?
Yeah. So from the opening, once it said, let me not say any spoilers yet, but from the opening.
You could say spoilers. I'll just give the spoiler warning now. Spoiler for anything that's happened in Star Wars so far.
Okay. So once we got the 1 year BBY, right? I was like, oh, we saw it like it's 1 year later from the last arc, right? And I just said to myself, man, this is about to be over.
Yeah.
Like the finality of the situation hit me immediately.
Yeah, there's not a lot of B before the Y anymore.
Right. And it was just like, wow. Not that the series is about to be over, but that their role in the rebellion is about to be over.
Right.
Because I have the knowledge of what's to come. Right. And it just hit like, they don't know what they're really up against.
And they were really pushing that this episode, right?
Yes.
This psychic force healer is like, you have somewhere to be. And I was like, I know where he's supposed to be.
And it was just really something. I was just like, wow, this is it. This is they're in the end game. To borrow from another franchise, they're in the end game. And it hit me. And I thought that was incredibly powerful for me. I really thought this episode was really good at setting that stage up, and I am so in on what happens next.
Yeah, me too. And I mean, I turned off this episode after I was done, and I was like, I can't watch the next one because I got a podcast on it, but I really want to just cheat and go to the next one.
Yeah.
I didn't, folks, I promise.
I haven't watched that.
I'm spoiler free.
Yeah, so am I. So it's just like, wow. Yeah, this is it.
It's a really great arc, and you have not just the Cassian developments, but the commentary on like how appeasement works with fascist totalitarian states. Like, you can't just, you know, it's
wish it all away.
Have the senator from Gorman going, can you turn back the clock? Like, no. That's the only way that this gets better. No, like, you had your chance. You had your chance 2 years ago, and Mon Mothma goes, hey, help me with this legislation. And not that it would have worked. Like, it would not have worked, but still.
But you would have, you know, given a fight.
Right.
And they basically rolled over.
It's also like pretty fascinating, like watching real world events today
unfold the way that they're unfolding. Yes.
You see that like some people are choosing to capitulate to the totalitarian tendencies of leaders. and others are choosing to fight. And actually, as much as the people who are capitulating are doing it to like get an easier time, you see more success on the fighting side. Like they're actually getting less crap later.
Yes.
From the original requester.
Yes.
Of compliance. And that's, I do think that's a lesson to be learned, is like, no, these people, these totalitarian leaders, like the empire, they're weak. They're weak, and they have to use tools of fear and tools of individualized
propaganda.
Yeah, propaganda, but also, what am I trying to say? It's like pre-compliance, you know, listening in advance. They use these tools of self-censorship to keep a hold on people that they wouldn't be able to do without those people doing it to themselves too. You know, like, yes, the might of the empire is important, but so is the fact that a lot of people just won't fight back.
Exactly. Exactly.
Until it's too late.
And in that conversation between the Gorman senator and, you know, mom, you just see that.
Yeah. It's tragic. Well, I guess we can get more into detail like that later.
Yeah.
Plenty of stuff going on. Make sure you're checking out our Discord. Make sure you're sending emails to andor@thelorehounds.com to get into the conversation. We have a little bit of feedback today, so that'll be fun. And let's get into the episode, John.
All right.
So we start off with Cassian and Bix. Cassian and Bix have settled on Yavin 4, where the rebels have developed a base. Cassian is wounded from a blaster and still angry with Luthen. Will comes home to offer Cassian the mission of killing Dedra Miro, who has been spotted on Gorman. Cassian eventually agrees and travels to Gorman. So, Will's home, not with Saw.
But he's not the same Will that left.
No.
He's so much more, he has so much gravitas. He's so, it's like he's grown. He's grown up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, the Rhydon will do that. Or Rhydon, yeah, sorry.
That
his lungs have grown.
It's something, yeah. Like his voice is deeper. There's just something about him. It's like, this is the same Will, you know. Yeah. And he just has a more seriousness to his countenance. You know what I mean? And I really appreciated it. I love that he said that it took a while for him to get home, to get out.
Yeah.
Right. And that could mean so many different things. Maybe he was addicted. And maybe he had to fight that addiction. We don't know yet if we ever will know. Maybe he had to fight Saw to get out. You know, just he's gone through. Obviously, he's gone through things. We know that he's gone through things because we saw where he ended at the last at the end of the last arc. We saw where he was going into, and he seems to have. I don't know if he's come out of that, but he seems to be in a far different place than he was in the last arc. And that is amazing.
Right. He won't even tell Cassian where he's been, right? And Cassian's always the one saying, I can't tell you who I'm from, but you better tell me who you're from.
Right.
And now Cassian gets it flipped on him. I love that.
Yep.
I love that.
He's grown.
Also, wasn't it so nice to see Bix so much healthier mentally?
Yes.
Like she is feeling so much better about herself. Yes. She feels you could sense her security, her sense of self-security much better here.
I mean, this is, and it scares me. It scares me because I saw her and I immediately was like, oh man, she's in a better place than she's in the best place that I've ever seen her in.
Once you're in a better place, you might be going to a better place.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that was my first thought on seeing their conversation and how she embraced Will and all of that. I just was like, this sucks. Not that she sucks, right?
Yeah. But, I think there's a reason that she's not in Rogue One, right? Like there's a reason she's not on Cassian's team in Rogue One.
Yeah. And it's just like, oh, man. Not now, you know? Not now.
And again, we've not watched ahead, so nobody go back and if something happens, be like, Sean and John spoiled me. No, we did not.
Right.
We're just that good at predicting.
So, yeah, I just... I love the moments between Cassian and Bix as well. You still see the strength of their relationship, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a great thing that she, throughout this episode, you can see her calling him out, mm-hmm. you know? And
really, because that's a part of intimacy, right?
Exactly.
Is calling out your partner when they need to be called out.
Calling them out. And just, it's nice. It's refreshing to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. Great arc here. I'm very curious where this is going to go in the rest of this three episode arc.
Yes.
Because are we gonna get Dedra? Are we gonna, you know, is Vix gonna do something drastic about Cassian? Like, she goes, he'll be there when you need him later. And I'm like, ooh, what do you mean by that? You got like an electric prod you're gonna poke him with? get him off onto the rebel ship.
She's just certain of his character. She's certain of his character.
Yeah, and his strength, I think that's of right. character,
you know?
I think that's
and,
right.
And she's proven right.
Yeah, I mean,
history tells us, she's proven right.
Right. Like, yeah, Cassian, like, hid her away. He came to rescue her and hid her away on that planet. And then the minute she was in trouble on that planet, he comes in, swoops in, literally swoops in yep. with a ship and yep. picks her up.
Yep.
Yeah. He does yeah, show up when he's needed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He might whine about it, but he shows up.
And you know what's interesting too is that Will says, oh, Luthen wants to know if you're ready. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, Luthen, I think he got to chill a little bit. You know what I'm saying? He has to, I don't know if I could see myself being a part of a movement that he's the leader of.
It's tough. It's also tough because he's changed so much since season one. And in a way, I think it's good writing. It's not like it's a completely changed character. It's that in season one, he's extremely cautious. He is, you know, always slow moving. Let's move these things slowly over years. And then season two, he's like, look, things are getting bad. We right. need to do something now. And I totally get what he's going for there.
Yes.
But at the same time, he's like fire. Like he right. will spread right. viciously and indiscriminately, like he'll just go through and like if you are in his way, he will mow you down.
Yep. And I think Cassian, you know, he feels it.
Yeah,
he knows that
he does.
He, like, you're expendable. He might like Cassian. Mm-hmm. He might really, you know, value what he brings and sees him as a leader. Mm-hmm. of a future movement, but Cassian also knows that he will sacrifice him if yeah. need be.
I think Cassian knows that Luthen sees him as a tool right now, but he sees him as a tool with the potential to be more.
Right, right.
And that's yeah. what Will is asking. Are you ready to be more than a tool?
Right.
Yeah. Man, it's such a good episode.
Good stuff,
I could gush about this all day.
Yeah,
it's good stuff. Why don't we go on to the Force Healer?
Yeah.
So Bix tricks Cassian into going to a Force Healer who touches Cassian, sharing a vision with him that shocks them both. She speaks of clarity, all that he has been gathering, and his strength of spirit. Cassian runs off, but Bix finds him with a partially healed wound.
Yeah.
So he's got it. What happened with him 10 years ago that he's so mad about Force Healers?
Right. We don't really know, because he doesn't seem to trust it.
No.
Nor believe in it.
Right.
Right. And like it's like a, you know, malarkey.
Right.
It's not real. Believing in something that you can't see to help you isn't real.
Yeah.
Right? It can't possibly be of service to anyone to believe that this invisible thing could actually be a source of power. How? Yeah. And that's what I felt from Cassian in that moment, looking at her like, what are you doing?
Yeah. With this? Yeah, like, oh, your invisible little field's gonna heal me?
Yeah, please get out of here.
Get me into a back to tank. How about that?
Right, exactly. Yes. Absolutely. And it's, you know, and watching the healer, I was just like, is she channeling the Force? Is she a former Padawan, Jedi, something? You know, is she just one of those Force-sensitive people? Mm-hmm. So I had questions.
Yeah.
You know,
she's certainly old enough to have been a Jedi, right? Like she is of that generation. Alicia actually wrote in, you know, she gave me her list of lore.
Oh, okay.
And that's great. One of the things she said is Force healers, we know it is or can be real, but Cassian feels the same way about it that many people feel about Reiki in the real world.
Yes.
This is 17 years after the fall of the Jedi. But see, what's different from Reiki in this world is that, like, there are people alive who have seen the Force work.
Right.
You know, like not just like healing your spirit and healing the body, maybe, but in a way that's like, hey, I just got lifted off the ground.
Right.
So I do think, I will say, like, it is always surprising to me, like, how much people doubt. You know, 17 years is a long time in some ways. For the young, it's really long. For the older, for people 40 plus, that's just in your adult life.
Yeah.
And I don't think that, I don't know if that's always represented well. She also says this also sets up an important role, the concept of the will of the Force that plays a large role in Rogue One and A New Hope.
It does. That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's good stuff. She's always got the good lore bombs.
Yeah, she does. She does. But yeah, I was just like, and then she, as she's talking to Cassian, like, as if, you know, this was, she says something like, I haven't felt this in so long. Thank you. Right.
And yeah, like he gives her hope again.
Right. You know, and that's what's channeling the Force, that feeling that she has of hope. Right. And that's what's allowing her to feel the things that she was capable of feeling before.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's been absent. There's been an absence of hope.
Right.
From for her.
Yeah.
And now as soon as Cassian walks in, she's like, oh, maybe things can happen for good. Maybe we can do something to change the course that we're on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, and I think that's been my whole kind of like my theme running throughout this season, is that these are folks that are living in a time where they they're trying to fight back. Don't get me wrong. But generally speaking, hope is a fleeting sentiment. So even as they're fighting back, it's like, can we really win? I don't know.
Yeah.
Whereas,
if I could quote Rings of Power, hope is never mere, even when it is meager. Right? This is a theme people love to muse about.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not until you get to Luke where you feel like, we're going to do this. You know what I mean? Like, we're going to do this. And it's going to happen and it's going to work. And we believe. We all believe.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think everyone has that sense at this time.
And it's also like the person who takes the final shot is often the one who gets the credit. Like,
look, yeah, we talked about that last time.
He takes the shot at the Death Star. Sure, he does it. He's an important part of the puzzle, but he's not the only piece of the puzzle.
No, so much had to fall into place for him to be able to do that.
You have the full jigsaw puzzle in front of you and one piece is missing, and that one piece is Luke.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. There's some great dialogue here. I love Bix going, you scared him. That's not easy to do.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, like, that really tells you it again, this dialogue is really great because it's sparse, but it's pithy, you know? It tells you everything you need to know in a couple sentences.
Yes.
It doesn't belabor itself.
No.
It doesn't overstay its welcome. It is just exactly what you need.
Like, they're speaking with purpose. Mm-hmm. Their words have purpose, right? They have meaning. Yeah. And when someone is having a conversation in this series, that conversation carries weight because of the seriousness of what they're talking about.
And I think people have mixed feelings on dialogue like that. Like, people say, like, oh, people don't talk like that in the real world. I'm like, yeah, well, we're not in the real world. I'm not watching this to live in the real world. I'm watching this to watch this crazy rebellion.
Right.
And I'm watching this to, like, muse on hope and muse on purpose. Like, this, oh my God, these
this lines is the from, Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Star Wars. In a galaxy far, far away. Did you not read the title card? So then the Force Healer says to Bix, most beings carry the things that shape them. They carry the past, but some, very few, your pilot. They're gathering as they go. There's a purpose to it. He's a messenger. There's some place he needs to be. Maybe you're the place he needs to be. So that too, I love that because she says something so wise and then she's like, I don't know, maybe you. Like she, that shows you like how tricky prophecies are, right? Like there's some place he needs to be. Okay, big galaxy.
Yeah.
Where does he need to be?
Yeah. Where does he need to go? Maybe you're the one he needs to show him. That's how I took it. I took it like, you know, you have to lead him to where he's going. And I think that's, you know, the thing that later on in the episode, when they're talking about Cassian being a leader, right? And not Bix. That struck me because she is very much the leader. Right? Like she is the person and it gave me the dread again of what's to come. You know what I mean? It was like, no, I hear you. I understand that Cassian has a role.
And so he's got a very special set of skills like Liam Neeson.
Yes, exactly. But in that moment, in that convo, when they're talking about him as a leader and we're here to talk to you, to talk to him, no, you need to be tapping into what Bix is able to do.
Yeah. You know, I honestly hope they don't kill Bix because...
Oh, man.
But not just because I like the character, but because it feeds into that woman always dies trope, right? Like, she'll die and motivate Cassian to take it seriously. Nah, I don't like that. We don't want
her fridged. No.
I don't like that. I want her to mourn Cassian. I want her to be the one who, you know, after Rogue One...
Remembers him.
We said spoilers for all Star Wars, so I don't want any emails. We said, you know, after Rogue One, I want her to be like, he did it, and like hold him in her heart.
That would be amazing.
And motivate him without dying. Like, she doesn't need to die to motivate him.
I totally agree. I don't want to see her go. But it would be so Star Wars for her to go.
Yeah. Yeah, because Star Wars was written by a man in the 70s. Yeah, so it's
basically,
you know what I mean? Like it's there's a reason it's a trope. It's very overused.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else on this scene?
No, just I want more healers in the universe.
Well,
maybe everybody doesn't need to be a Jedi.
Grogu healed. That's the only other one I remember.
Right. But I want more of these force sensitive people in the universe who are not Jedi.
Yeah. That'd be nice. I love when we get those like low force sensitive users.
Non-Sith,
I wish we'd keep them low looking at Ahsoka. You know, like do something creative with the low level force users. Don't just be like, and then one day they were really high level force users.
No. Yeah. But we love some Ahsoka over here. So,
yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break. When we get back, we'll continue the episode. Are you looking to get more out of The Rebellion but don't want a recurring subscription? Check out our Andor Season Pass, linked in the show notes, where you'll get bonus holocron episodes diving deep into the lore behind the series, Alicia's Rebel Squadron Radio briefing you on the timeline, and ad-free versions of our coverage of Seasons 1 and 2. All that for a one-time purchase of $10. Whether you're with us for the season or the long haul, welcome to The Rebellion, and may the Force be with you. We're back and ready to go to Gorman. On Gorman, the press is playing up the escalating terrorism threat by the rebels. The Imperials are now all around Palmo, and Cyril looks troubled. Partagaz tells Dedra they have exhausted alternatives and it's time to take action on Gorman. Dedra reassures Cyril they'll be back on Coruscant rewarded soon enough. He decides to reach out to Enza from the Gorman front and offer to help them if they give up the outside agitators. But he just gets slapped. The Gorman front debates its next course of action. Bad luck, Gorman. Mm. Partagaz is just straight up evil.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Does not care at all.
Doesn't care.
Does not care at all for the loss of human life.
No. Does not care. And that's the thing. You know, this part, I'm listening to the transmissions of the news, and I'm wondering to myself how much of that is real. That's how masterful of a job the Empire has done to cast, because I'm casting doubt. I'm doubting, like, which parts of this news story are real, which parts are fake. You know, how are the rebels really, are the people on Gorman really to blame? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's how insidious the propaganda is.
What's super interesting is how much it blurs the lines. So, so like you're saying, it's blurring the lines, but not just by creating fiction, but manufacturing crises.
Yes.
And so the Gormans never would have done anything had the Empire not, like, put their boot on its neck.
Right.
And then they end up rebelling, but we know for a fact that this was purposefully driven.
Yes.
This was something they wanted to happen, that they were curating for a couple of years just to make sure that these rebels made a mistake. And that's fascinating. So it's both manufacturing the facts and lying.
Right. Right.
It's a double layered deception, which is insane.
And it works.
It does work.
It does work.
And we see that all across the world, right?
All across the world.
Dictators will just, like, brutalize citizens and be like, well, they hit the cops back. So they had, you know, it's like, who shot first?
I mean, we had to do it. You know, it was a violent protest. Like,
right, exactly. Exactly. Look, after we threw the tear gas, everyone got upset. And then and then it became violent.
Right. So we had to, you know, go in with the boots and the batons and the shields and the rubber bullets and the hoses and all of that.
Exactly. It reminds me of, like, We Own the City, right? Like, did you watch that show?
I did.
It's the same thing, right? It's like, oh, you just beat the crap out of me and now I'm hitting you back. Time to arrest me.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There's just so much, like, just watching Podagast, Daedra, and Cyril, that triangle, just terrible human beings.
You know, I think it's fascinating, too, because Daedra goes, well, you're aware they have weapons, right? And Podagast goes, we're counting on it. So I think that moment actually clicks for Daedra that it's not just that he doesn't care about rebel life. He doesn't care about Imperial soldier lives either.
And, you know, she tells Cyril, like, yo, go pack. We got to get out of here. Because she knows, like, if I stay here, no matter what he's telling me, I could very well lose my life as well.
Right.
And no one will bat an eye. No matter what Podagast is telling her. How pleased people are, how they've recognized, you know, what she's done. In that moment, she knows if she doesn't hightail it out of there, is the likelihood of her and Cyril making it out alive is greatly diminished. I think she
understands. I didn't even consider that. And now that you say that, that's genius, Sean, because now that you say that, I'm like, I could totally see Captain Kaido right after the drill just, like, shooting her.
Yeah.
And she knows. Under orders of Podagast.
No, because she knows.
Yeah, exactly. And they want as few witnesses that might be truthful as possible.
As possible.
I think the only thing saving Daedra will be that she is a true company woman. She is, like, very loyal to the ISB. She has shown no mercy for the rebels. She's shown no care for human life thus far. Right. And so I think Podagast might see her as, I think that's the career potential he sees in her, not just her planning, but her coldness, her
callousness. It's also in parallel to Luthen and Cassian.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You're right.
These are two, between Luthen and Cassian, we have, and Daedra and Podagast, we have, you know, two would-be mentors and their mentees. Right. And the mentors are perfectly fine risking the lives of their mentees.
Yeah. And
I think the mentees are realizing that.
Yeah. So Cyril.
Yes.
I want to talk about Cyril and his cereal. He did eat cereal in the last arc, and I didn't get that episode, and I was so mad because we always talk about Cyril eating cereal. And so I want to talk about him. You know, we talked about him last week. Nice because we get to regroup on our conversation from last week. I usually have to just change up every week on this, but you know, you were very convinced like he will not flip. He is not going with the Gormans. No. Has that changed this week?
No.
Really? Even after that reach out to Enza?
Yes.
Explain.
I think when push comes to shove, Cyril will choose self-preservation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice right now in the moment to be with the Gorman front and saying, hey, let me help you out. But I am convinced that blaster to head, Cyril's getting on that, you know, he's getting on the carrier and he's hightailing it out of Gorman before the shit hits the fan.
And then he gets on the carrier and Dedra goes, turn the lights off.
Basically, yes. Yes. And even when you know, and I can see why, you know, folks, why you would question that, because when she kisses him and he looks at her like in horror almost, right?
Yeah.
I didn't take that as in horror of, you know, what's about to happen on Gorman. I just think Cyril is just a weird guy. Like, given the way that he was raised, I just think he's like, shows of affection in that way are probably not the things that he's used to or comfortable with. The lights are on. They're in a public space with other Imperials around them. And she chooses to show affection. And he's like, what the fuck? Like, we don't do that, right? What are you doing? So I really don't think that him offering, saying to Enza, hey, just give me a couple of people we can blame, is him trying to stave off, you know, what's about to happen on Gorman.
Yeah. He's not smart enough to figure out the Empire's real plan on Gorman.
You know, I don't think so either. No.
He's just not smart enough. Like, he goes, oh, if we give up a couple people, they'll leave you alone. It's like, no, the point is to blame the planet so that you can decimate the planet.
Right.
And that's just, it's tragic. I do think Cyril is a loose end Partagaz is not going to want out there.
Oh, I totally agree with that. Which is why I think Dedra is so set on hightailing it off the planet.
Yeah. Because I can honestly see them leaving her alive and then ordering her to kill Cyril or something like that.
I could see that too, but it becomes, I think for her rationale being on Corsicant, kind of, it shouldn't feel safer for them, but I can see her thinking, if we're off this planet, out of this, you know, backwater planet and back on the capital, it'll be harder to get rid of either one of them. I think she's in self-preservation mode. I really do.
Yeah. I think your read on this is great, John. I'm so glad we're talking about this today, because I didn't even consider this idea of, like, she thinks she's a loose end that's going to get tied up.
Yeah, she's smart. And again, it's just this parallel to Cassian and Luthen that she has with Partagaz. And I think they're both, you know, on a trajectory that's going to lead them to a place they don't want to end up for different reasons. But they're being manipulated, they're being used, and Dedra's smart enough to know that.
Yeah.
And she's smart enough to also understand what happens to people who, you know, could potentially embarrass or even, you know, spill the beans on the inner workings of an operation such as this. Because this is not just, you know, rounding up some rebels. This is full-scale genocide.
Right.
She knows.
Right. Yeah. Even if they justify it as, like, it was for the power project, which we know that's a lie.
Right.
But this was for this unlimited renewable power project. Like, no one's going to accept that.
No one's going to accept that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's an uprising that you do this, right? And to have the potential of someone on the inside, she knows.
Yeah. And look, she's been told this has to appear as a demotion, but you know that what's going through her head is this really a demotion?
Right.
Like, maybe I'm just a useful idiot who messed up on Ferrix, and this is their way of using me one last time and then getting rid of me. Yeah. Oh, man. What if Cassian successfully kills her, and then the party guy's like, yeah, that's fine. One thing off my list.
that would be so cold.
Like, it served the Empire anyway.
Yeah, oh man, that would be so cool.
When Cassian, oh man, we're writing the next episode, John. Damn, that's great.
That would be so cold. Ugh.
One more thing off the list. Ugh. I wonder if Dedra is killed and maybe Cyril's witness to like the reaction. I wonder if he would go flip. Like, I do think there's potential for Cyril to flip, not because he's moral, but because he's stupid and a survivalist.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, I think if he thinks, like, I'm going to die in the hands of the Empire, he might be like, I'll help the rebels. I'll tell you everything I know, Cassian.
I could see that. Self-preservation. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I hadn't given that thought. But yeah.
I think that Cassian would just shoot him in the head right away. I think Will might stop him.
Right. And it's because he could be a useful,
You know,
piece of information.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could see Cyril trying to go on a favor to stay alive.
All right, I think I'm done putting on clown makeup for my theories that are going to fall apart next episode. Somebody clip this and respond to my bad theories.
They're not bad. I don't think they're bad at all.
Tony Gilroy is like, you fool. You have no idea what I have in store for you.
Ha, ha, ha,
Tony Gilroy, fan of pod, we know.
Twirling his mustache. His mustache, you know.
Tony Gilroy would be like, I put out all three episodes. Why are you only watching one? All right. So Gorman is a whole mess. I'm sure we'll see more happen next time. We got this new character, Captain Kaido. He's involved now with this. We don't know what he's going to do next. And
I know what's going to happen to those soldiers that got off that transport.
Although Alicia says most of the Imperial commanders this ep were introduced in earlier eps this season or last.
I don't remember this.
So maybe, I don't remember him either, but maybe I'm wrong. All right. Let's
cannon fodder.
Indeed. They do not care even a little bit.
Those new recruits they're done for.
Yeah. That's it. And that's why, like, they're like, oh, they're all young. It's like, that's the point, buddy. I've been reading the Stormlight Archive, and there's this idea of bridgemen, like these people who, I don't know, have you read these at all?
I have not.
So there are these people that literally, their whole job is to not wear armor, but carry the bridges that take people to the next plane.
Lord
have mercy. To carry them and, like, run ahead of the army without cover, basically. And like, it takes a long time for them to realize, like, hey, slaves get that job, and very punished soldiers get that
criminals
job. Anyway, what I was gonna say is, like, it takes them a long time to realize, like, oh, the job is not just to carry the bridge, it's to draw fire away from the soldiers.
Yes, right,
because we're the easier targets. And you're like, damn, that's cold. That's cold. That's not really a spoiler. You can figure that out in like the first few chapters. So
okay,
cool. everyone chill. Everyone be real cool about this. I don't need the spoiler police after me.
They'll come for you too, you know.
I know. That's why I'm warding them off now with a torch.
Okay. All right.
Mon Mothma is involved too with Gorman. On Coruscant, Mon Mothma grows worried about her driver. As new reports of Palmo grow more concerning, Mon gets a sort of apology from Gorman Senator Dazi Orin. He wants her to turn back the clock. He goes, they don't even bother to lie badly anymore.
Yeah, you should have thought about that when they first started lying well. And you knew it.
Yeah.
You know? That's such a telling statement. They don't even bother to lie badly anymore. Well, whose fault is that?
Yeah, he certainly didn't help. Look, I think they were going to lose anyway.
Of course, yes.
Or not lose, but like just get invaded like this. Like, I can't see this going well for the Gormans, honestly.
No.
This whole thing. I think this is going exactly according to Partagaz's plan.
Yeah.
And Cassian's there for one discreet mission. He's not prepared to like fight off the Empire.
No, he's not. And yeah, he's, I think they're unaware of how serious the situation really is.
Yeah. Because they can't see the end game. And that's something Luthen said last arc. He's like, what is their goal? Yeah. I need to know in order to fight them. Like, I need to understand what they're trying to do. And nobody can think as big as the Emperor, who's like, hey, let's build this giant Death Star.
Yeah.
That's like, nobody thought they were building a planet killer. Nobody thought they could possibly stoop to that level. Or that it was even scientifically possible, right?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's...
because Galen Erso figures it out.
That's
nobody else will figure that out.
Of Palpatine, right?
Yeah. He's genius.
Ah, man, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like I said, like I saw a couple weeks ago the Revenge of the Sith in theaters, and I'm just always blown away by Palpatine's manipulations. Like, also, Ian McDiarmid is like so good at the facial expressions, the twist of phrase. It's so good. He's so good. I hope he doesn't show up in the series, though. He doesn't fit in this.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah. We need the more grounded characters. Alicia did write in with some tidbits about this one. She says Senator Orin of Gorman is the one who Mon talks to when she enters the Senate. I guess I already said that one. You know, that's the same one she talked to last arc, as we talked about last time. I think that's the only thing she had about this part, but yeah, it's just tragic. Like, there's not a lot to say about the scene except like the tragedy. And then of course we have the deal about the driver, which we know, last season they gave her a new driver and Mon knew that it was from the Empire. He was meant to listen.
And also, you know, when the senator is talking to Mon and he's like, you know, recognizing what she's has been doing, right? I think that's very powerful because it's firmly placing Mon in a leadership role, right? In a way that Luthen is not.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep returning back to Luthen because I just, you know, the story is what the story is. It's about what the Emperor and the Empire are doing, right? And how to fight that. And Luthen represents something that we celebrated, right? I was so happy to meet this type of character in the first season, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm.
To get to know a little bit more about this guy. So happy to see how he was fighting and twisting and turning and just operating in the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
And as I've watched this season, I've come to realize that this is not, again, I question whether I would want to follow this person in a movement.
Follow him? No, I don't think I'd want to follow him, but as he kind of points out to Mon Mothma, like, Mon Mothma can only operate as she does because Luthen operates as he does.
I know,
like, he gives her the room to have that moral space.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'm trying to really pinpoint what it is about Luthen that I find so distasteful.
It's the I think it's the cavalier nature of his discussion of human life. I mean, he'll throw Krieger out the window last season.
So what makes him different from Partagaz?
That's the question, right? Like, that, I think we're supposed to be asking ourselves that question.
Right.
Is what makes this guy more moral?
Is it the scale of human life that's lost?
Right? I think it's just not that different. But we're meant to ask, do the ends justify the means? And Luthen's ends are, let me use the tools. You know, he says, I'll use the tools of my enemy to defeat them. He will act terrible. He'll allow a genocide to occur on Gorman to have the rest of the galaxy be free in his
awaken,
eyes.
Awakened to what's mm-hmm. going on, to have more, you know, people on the right. side of the rebellion. He's right. willing to lose that.
Right.
In order to get something else.
Right.
And if you're making those sorts of bargains, then is that someone I want to be in cahoots with?
It's a great question. Great question. Luthen, it's tough because the Emperor wants to do all these things. Partagaz wants to do all these things to maintain control and to maintain a fascist society. And yet Luthen wants to do it to create a more, I'm using liberal in like the small L, like liberal as in like free society. And the question you have to ask yourself is it worth it? Is it worth all this pain? And then you have to say, well, if Luthen doesn't use this pain and this goes on another 30 years, will more people die? So now you have almost like a trolley problem.
Right.
It's really tough. And then you have Mon, who's again allowed the moral space to do what she wants to do. And what I think is fascinating here, you talk about the praise she gets from Dazi Orin, and yet she knows that what he's praising is just a front. What he's praising right. is this feckless show she puts on to allow her to do the real work in the shadows.
But I think it's also a recognition, because he says something alluding to that fact,
mm-hmm.
the grace that you put on. It's like it's almost like he recognizes she's putting on a show.
Yeah,
that's what I felt. So, and I think to put on a show in these circumstances, and we know what she's doing in the background, right? But to put on a show in these circumstances, to try to enact some sort of favorable change, knowing that the favorable change probably will only come at blaster point, quite honestly.
Yeah.
I think there's a recognition and an appreciation for what Mon has been attempting to do and trying to sway the rest of the Senate away from this fascist appeasement. And the Gorman senator, he represents that appeasement. And in this moment where his people are in mortal danger, and he knows it without a doubt, is when he says, you know what? You were right. But we needed you were right a few years ago.
Yeah. Or even 1 year ago when she's working on the right. board.
Right.
Yeah.
We needed you were right then. Because that's the only way you can hope to stop the onslaught. Right?
Right.
But we don't get that.
Well, I'm sure we'll hear more from Mon next episode. But for now, let's go and take a break. We'll come back and we'll wrap everything up. We're back to talk about Cassian's mission. So Cassian and Will prepare to go on an unspecified mission destination trip. I don't know. I wrote that very weird. But you get my point. Cassian is told he needs to declare his loyalties to stay on Yavin 4 by Draven. Is it Draven or Draven? Do we know?
I think it's
Someone's
Draven.
Gonna tell us. Someone tell us.
Okay. I'll say
Draven. Sure. Let's go with Draven. Cassian says the day he needs permission to come and go, he's gone. He's told that day is near. On Gorman, Cassian checks into the same hotel as a journalist named Ronnie Guja. What a name. He's told they'll have to report his presence to the Empire the following day, as he has no entry stamp. The Gorman attendant he spoke to as Varian Sky recognizes him and gives him a heads up. Imperial forces run drills ahead of the operation. Cassian sees stormtroopers in the room above him. I loved seeing the chatter, hearing the chatter, and then him taking that mirror and just being like, oh, there's stormtroopers right there.
Yeah. What's happening here? Let me close this window very softly.
Which is fascinating because I do think he, you know, he's on this one revenge mission, but he's not the kind of person to be single-minded and not also taking his surroundings. Right. So I wonder how much he's going to get involved when all the everything just hits the fan on Gorman.
That's a good question. That's a good question.
Or is he going to go, I told you, Luthen, that this was hopeless and you created this situation. I'm not involved.
I can see him saying I'm not involved.
Yeah.
Because that's where his head is at right now.
At the same time, like, what can that one person do against this whole thing?
What can one person do to turn the tide of history?
Well, to turn the tide of history, fine, but you need allies. And I think that's a big part of the rebellion. And right now it's him and Will. Good luck. What's he going to, like, breathe out some Rido on these people? Like, I don't know. What does Will have to do?
Maybe saw it somewhere. I don't know. It's hopeless.
Saw just hopeless crashes situation. His ship into the square. I feel like that's not unrealistic.
Not totally not unrealistic, given who Saw is. You know what I mean? So
unhinged guy.
But this is something, man. This is something because now he knows this is not what I signed up
for. Yeah. And you know what I love is Cassian checks into the hotel as this new thing, and obviously the attendant that he talks to recognizes him right away.
Yep.
He's like, oh, that's just that Varian Sky guy, whatever his real name is. That's the same guy. And yet he doesn't give him up.
He doesn't give him up.
And he doesn't. And what that really struck me with is, you know, they have this code phrase that's like, I have friends everywhere.
Yeah.
And that was a big deal in episode, I think, 5 and 6.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's just a catchphrase. That is, everywhere you go, and Cassian's really good at this, everywhere you go, seek out the people, like, look for the helpers, right? Isn't that something people say? Who said that? That was somebody's quote.
I forgot.
I'm going to find it out. I'm going to find it out. But the point is, he's making allies everywhere he goes. He can sense when somebody has, it's Mr. Rogers. So Mr. Rogers is writing Star Wars now. He's making allies everywhere he goes. He's really good at sensing who is sympathetic. Not even fully sympathetic, but who has questions. He can sense like a wandering eye towards like the memorial and the people who are obeying just because they have to, not because they want to, all that.
But I also think that Cassian is genuine.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So when he has that conversation with the hotel staff, the employee in the room when he was pretending to be someone else, he had a genuine conversation with this person. He didn't treat him as a lesser than, right? He was inquisitive. He spoke to him like a person, not a thing, not a tool, not an object. And that goes a long way. So, when he saw him again, he obviously knew, wait, something funny is going on here. But I have to imagine that he remembered the conversation and their interaction from before and made the calculation like, all right, this is not, I'm not going to turn this guy.
Right.
Now, if Cassian had been a jerk, maybe that would have been a different thing. But Cassian can be a jerk, but he is very, he's not like he doesn't treat people poorly until he needs to treat you poorly.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
And you won't know when he's decided that threat.
No, you won't know.
Because you'll have a blaster bolt in your heart.
Yeah, basically. But he's not going to do it until you kind of like force his hand to do it, because I don't think that's in his makeup. I think he's just a genuine person.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. But I think that's all part of it, right? It's also who, knowing who to be open with.
Yes, yeah,
is,
of course.
Is a skill, absolutely. And he has that skill.
And he has that skill.
And something else is he's really great at giving like pep talks, motivational speech and like motivating people to do the right thing. And he needs that too. He can't do it to himself. You know, he's not good at motivating himself.
Right.
He needs somebody else like Bix to be like, he'll be there when you need him.
Right.
Yeah. You know, we have the narc, of course, as the other bellhop.
Like
this bellhop, by the way, the good bellhop is Thela. That's his name.
Okay,
that's
thank you for that.
Alicia tells me. And of course, we have, you know, she says, you know, the bellhop is the one who told him about the Tarkin massacre the last year.
Right.
So, yeah, this is all heating up very quickly. I don't really have a lot to say about the scene. We already talked about like the youth of the soldiers and how that was going. I think these are mostly just facts to set up for next episode.
Yep.
So why don't we go on to the last scene I have outlined here?
Yeah.
Vel and Bix. Vel visits Bix, telling her she's taking a break from smuggling after getting reckless. Vel tells Bix the rebels are on the verge of promoting Cassian, but he has to stop the antics like this unreported trip. She calls Cassian a leader and asks for Cassian's discipline. Bix tells her he'll be there when they need him. So we talked about this a bit. I am glad that Vel seems to be healing.
Yes.
You know, grief is hard.
Yeah.
And it never goes away, but you learn to live with it.
Yep. Yep. And she looks like she's, you know, she's part of a rebellion. She's part of an army. That's what she says. We're building an army.
Yeah.
And we need Cassian to be part of it. And being in the army is learning to be disciplined.
Right. Right. And she goes, I don't think a little discipline is a lot to ask.
It could be, though.
A little she's not even asking him to like salute or anything. She's just like, hey, can you tell us where you're going when you're going somewhere?
Yeah, but this is Cassian we're talking about. You know?
I know.
A little discipline might be too much. I'm just saying.
Marva didn't train that into him, I guess.
Nah, not at all. Not at all.
No, Marva, fight the Empire.
Exactly. You know?
She always had that in her.
So I think it's again, like I said, I think they're looking at Cassian to be a leader, but there's a leader standing right in front of their eyes, and they're not recognizing that.
Yeah, I do think that's right. They are underestimating Bix. And part of that is, you know, after you've been through addiction and you know, Luthen saw her at her worst.
Yeah.
And I think he's nervous to trust her even at her best now.
But I kind of feel they're also moving away from Luthen.
Yeah, that's
true. She says we're building an army, you know. This is no longer, you know, the Luthen-led type of subterfuge, type of rebellion where we take our notes in from him and we just go about our business and do as he instructs. This seems to be coalescing into something beyond Luthen, which is maybe what he's wanted all this time. Mm-hmm. But definitely, I don't think this is a Luthen-led resistance anymore.
No, and I think you're right. It was never meant to be. He knew that he was not going to see the end of this.
Right.
He was creating enough chaos and recruiting enough people who had the potential to be leaders to give the rebellion a head start. And then he put Mon in charge of fundraising. Like he was smart in like orchestrating the beginning of a rebellion, but knowing he didn't have the skills to finish it.
Right.
I still want an explanation for his lightsabers on his ship.
that would be maybe we'll get it.
Yeah, maybe he'll use we'll it one it. More time and then go out with a bang. Because I don't think he survives the series. I don't think so either. He's got a, you know, we were promised he's not going to see the sunrise. I think that's going to happen. Yeah. Well, Alicia had a couple more lore drops on Yavin 4. So Draven, we talked about, he was introduced in Rogue One, and there was a mention of Dodonna and from a New Hope, and he's seen in Rebels too, or she. I don't know if I don't know if this is a man, woman, non-binary, anything else. They were mentioned in A New Hope and seen in Rebels too. Okay. Yavin 4 has pyramids, of course, as we saw. Yep. And I wanted to mention Alicia and David are going to be doing a lore cast on Yavin 4.
Oh, nice.
This weekend. So you will get that on Sunday, I believe. And Alicia, you know, our resident Star Wars lore expert, is going to be telling us all about, you know, where and what it is, where the temples came from, how it connects with the original movie and beyond. I'm really looking forward to that one because I don't know a lot about Yavin 4.
Right.
And another thing that Alicia just noticed this morning, like a half hour before we started recording, she said, Draven said Cassian's ship is supposed to be fitted with hypercoms, communications that can be used in hyperspace. Yeah,
hyperspace.
Though in Legends, it was defined as comms that could be on multiple channels at once. Interestingly, we've only seen this term used in reference to Imperial First Order Dark Side technology before this.
Ooh.
That's interesting. Where'd they get that from?
Somebody's playing with the dark.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. Alicia's always got the best lore bombs.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah. Check out the Holocron this week. That's going to be for subscribers and for season pass holders. So if you have the Andor season pass or you're a recurring subscriber on Patreon or Supercast, you can get that. Link in the show notes if you want to get into that. You go to the link tree. That'll bring you the recurring stuff, or there's a standalone link in the main bio or in the main show notes that brings you to the season pass. All right, I'm done being an ad, John.
Let's get to the feedback.
You want to read Eric S.?
Sure. Eric S. writes in, I wonder if the leader of the Gorman Front is actually an ISB double agent. But they make a comment about even the extremely wealthy are becoming involved, so it must be bad. My thought is that the leader has had dealings with the Empire in the past, selling the special spider silk, and the Empire approached them about starting an uprising for serious credits. Ooh. Thanks, Eric S. I hadn't thought about that.
And I'm gonna say I don't think so. I don't think Rylan's a bad guy.
That would be fascinating if he was.
But that feels like a cheap twist to me. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's so much more interesting if he's well-meaning, but he's leading them into the destruction of their planet.
Why?
Because that's way more like Star Wars Empire evil. That he just fails into this tragedy. Right. I think that's way more poetic than him being like, actually, I'm evil.
Maybe he's not evil. Maybe he's just greedy.
Yeah. I don't know.
Didn't think that the destruction of Gorman was going to occur by him just getting a few extra credits on the side.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a good question. I kind of hope it doesn't happen, but if it happens, I won't be terribly mad.
Right. Thanks, Eric. That was a good one.
Yeah.
E-Hoop writes in, hey, Hounds, enjoying the coverage, but it is difficult to keep up with this rate of flow. Something I noticed rewatching season one before is that there are a lot of big ifs in the story, and that seems to be continuing in season two, and in a really sad way. What I mean by big ifs is things where one little choice or one coincidence could basically end the story. What's interesting is that when I'm seeing them, they don't hit me in an eye-rolling way. Oh, there's plot armor. I suppose maybe that means it's good writing. I'll only throw out a couple of examples here. The first and biggest one is if Cyril had listened to his superior, who was truly almost 100% correct in his assessment of the corporal security officers dying in the first episode, Andor would never have gotten on the Imperial Sec radar, leading to practically everything that happens subsequently. If Cyril had just said, yeah, you're probably right, there's no Andor. In episode 5, you want to tackle that?
Sure. In episode 5, if Cass had just bumped into Cyril, who even knows what would have happened? The new example just came to me while listening to the Delta Squadron coverage of season 2, episode 5, but it's in relation to episode 6 and it's heartbreaking. If Vel hadn't insisted on going on the mission with Cinta and vice versa, Cinta might not have been there to get shot. And Vel surely is thinking that and will carry it with her much more than the dumb Gorman kid she chews out. I think the way these tiny choices and coincidences are linking, or separating huge events and cycles and important people really grounds it in a way. Anyway, keep doing what you're doing. Peace, E-Hoop. Thanks, E-Hoop. Yeah, a lot of big ifs. And I think a good story has a lot of what ifs. I mean, Marvel's What If is a whole series premised on that, right?
No, I think the what ifs are fascinating.
Yeah. And what if the Jedi Council had put Attican, made Attican a master and not had him spy on Palpatine?
Yeah. I mean, Star Wars is a big what if.
Yeah.
Little things can change the course of history. And I think that's one of the themes of the entire story.
What if Qui-Gon hadn't died and had trained Attican to be like a much more loving and peaceful Jedi
person? Yeah.
Yeah.
What if the Jedi didn't suck?
Yeah. Brutal. John's here to leave no, he leaves no crumbs.
Kick rocks Jedi.
but they're like, I can move them with my force.
Yeah, well, force move the rocks Jedi.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I don't need to kick rocks anymore. Yeah, I think it's interesting to think of all the what ifs. Like, what if, you know, what if Bix had died and not Brasso in that chase? And like, would Cassian have just been solo then and not had his fight with Luthen? And then would he have gone to Gorman? Would he have died on Gorman?
Would he have dropped out of the rebellion altogether?
Yeah. Yeah. What ifs are fun to do.
They are. They are.
Yeah. Well, thanks for all the feedback, everybody. If you didn't hear feedback on this, it's because we're saving it for episodes 5 or 6. I know Alicia wanted to tackle a couple of the ones that I know Brian 8063 wrote in with some war stuff. She's awesome. Got Luke, who's a war historian, on. So we want to make sure that everybody gets their feedback spread out on these 3 episodes.
Great.
All right. Well, let's talk about what else we're doing. You are doing, you did Sinners, right?
We did Sinners. It's out now. Check out the pod. Me, Anthony, and Alicia did that.
That's great.
So, yeah, wonderful movie. It's a great movie. It's an American masterpiece.
Still convinced it's a series. You're not going to convince me it's a movie.
Okay, I don't. Hey, I won't be mad. Let's just put it that way. So,
I'll break it up into half-hour chunks. Did you ever hear the story? There was like, and am I the asshole from Reddit? And it was about this guy who his girlfriend hates movies but loves series, and he wanted to show her Back to the Future. No. So he cut it into 30-minute parts and inserted credits after every half
hour. Amazing.
And he put it on, and she found out what he did, and she was so mad. And he's like, why? You liked
it. Why would you be mad? Right. That's amazing.
Isn't that so funny,
though? That's real love. That's love.
That's love, yeah. He wanted her to enjoy it, so he cut it up into chunks for her.
That's good stuff. Not the asshole. No.
Not the asshole. Thank you. No. You heard it here. We're not one of those podcasts that reads out all the Reddit posts, but maybe we'll include
in that one every in that one. Not the asshole.
That's funny. All right. What else we got? We got Last of Us, Doctor Who. We're having a lot of fun with Doctor Who. Can I just say that? Like, if you need a palate cleanser from the seriousness, go into Doctor Who. It's fun. It's silly. It's thought provoking, but not too thought provoking.
Yeah, I'm gonna binge the season.
It's really good.
Yeah,
it's really good. And Chuti is really embodying the Doctor. I'm really enjoying
it. I haven't listened to anything yet because I haven't watched. So once
you know, Cinta is the companion.
I heard.
Yeah, yeah. Virata Sethu, I think is her name. Yeah, and she's the companion in Doctor Who. So if you like Cinta and you want more of her, you're sad she's gone.
Check out
Doctor Belinda Who. over in Doctor Who. All right. And Last of Us is of course going swimmingly with me and David. Great season. John great is probably season. Telling everybody to kick rocks because everybody's being bad in it.
Man, there's just so much bad apples in this show.
Yeah.
You know, great episode on Sunday, though, I will say.
Okay. Yeah. I liked it. And you're going to do Thunderbolt soon, right? That's
yeah, I'm going to hopefully. I haven't seen the movie yet, so please don't tell me anything on Discord.
I'll try.
You know,
but, I can't tell you because I didn't see it either. But
yeah, so I'll hopefully be seeing it. I heard it's awesome.
Yeah.
And so Alicia and I will be covering that probably next week with Drop a Pod.
Very cool. All right. Check out the affiliates, of course. Radioactive Ramblings covering Fallout lore right now. Never mind the music, doing their music and psychology comparison and discussion. It's great stuff. Properly Howard movie review, Rings and Rituals. You can check them out. They'll be coming back soon. And I know Alicia has plans for some Wool Shift Dust and Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast stuff coming soon as well. So check out, they're all in the link tree in the show notes. Go and, you know, they're all free. Just subscribe. Yeah. They're on your podcast catcher. Go have fun. All right. Well, let me just give the thank you, Jean.
Cool.
And we have our Discord server boosters, Aaron K, Taylor the Thriller, Dork of the Ninjas, Dube 71, Athena A, Tina, Lestu, Nancy M, Ghost of Perdition, and Radioactive Richard, and our lore masters, Samartian, Michael G, Michelle E, Brian P, SC, Peter OH, Adam S, Nancy M, Dube 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Garrett C, Matthew M, Sarah M, Andra B, Kwong Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T, Alex V, Sub Zero, Aaron K, Dally V, Mothership 61, Gnarls, Kathy W, Lestu, Jeffrey B, Elisa U, Neil F, Ben B, Scott F, Stephen N, Julia F, Kali S, Ilmariel, /Tim, and Adrian. Thank you everyone for all your support. It's been a pleasure to do Andor, and it's been a pleasure to have Jean here today.
It's always fun with you, man. So appreciate me having me on, co-piloting this mothership. Let's go.
Yeah. Let's do it again soon.
All right. Peace.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds and connect with us on Twitter at The Lorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.